DeSanto Propane is four generations strong as a trustworthy family-owned business with unmatched customer service. Go online at DeSantoPropane.com for more info or call toll-free at 1-800-752-4574. Since 1937, the difference has been DeSanto Propane.
Fresh Takes with Russo and Felice. Paul Russo saying, "What's up, brother?" Nick Felice, yeah. I was trying to figure out a way to do it. You know, special teams, special plays, special players. Nick Felice next to me as always. Nick, good to see you. It's going to be an interesting podcast episode today. We got really two main topics, a nice little side piece, third topic as well.
I love a good side piece. But,
you know, it's like, you know, when you go and get a nice two-piece fried chicken meal, a nice little mashed potato with it, you know. It's the way we do it around here.
Well, speaking of brothers, happy National Siblings Day.
It is.
Yeah, April 10th, National Siblings Day. You better say that to your brother, Pat, when you get home.
Well, I won't be seeing Pat until, let's see.
I haven't even texted my sibling.
It is 2:32 right now on Wednesday, April 10th. I will not see Pat until probably about this time in 9 hours. So,
well, just cherish all the moments you've had.
Well, you know, we've had our ups and downs, but no, getting aside, Pat. Pat's chill enough. We can keep him.
Yeah, where is he? He used to come on here a month. He hasn't been on this podcast in
pre-COVID, I think. Maybe yeah. We had him on post-COVID.
We had those weird afternoon ones there for a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's tough because now, like, you know,
at least 3 years though it's been.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough though now because of just the way our schedules are. Like, we kind of, I wouldn't say we're pinned into where we are live and record, you know, Wednesdays afternoons right now. But like, it's obviously way better for you and way better for me and. I guess it's easier for me because we can kind of pretty much choose any time that we don't have another podcast around here that I have to produce. But
just say you missed the Tuesdays at 10.
I do not miss the Tuesdays at 10. Oh, man, I do not miss that at all. But, yeah.
Yeah, but happy National Siblings Day. Happy April. I mean, second week of April now. It's kind of flying by. We're a couple days away for a big day for you, too. Yeah. Yeah. I touched on it a little bit last week, but that eclipse on Monday was one of the coolest things I've seen in my entire life.
If we could have seen it, yeah.
But just the experience of it.
I guess.
The darkness was cool.
Well, and that's the – I don't want to downplay it for us because it was cool. Like, I had friends in Cleveland, you know.
That was a good spot for it.
Kind of text me, and they were in the clear for it there. And they're just like, oh, it was so cool. I'm like, yeah, it was cloudy here. So it was like pretty much we got nighttime for about 2 minutes, and that was it. But, yeah, it was pretty interesting, too. As we got closer to the day, too, the true totality actually shifted north a little bit more, and being here in Seneca Falls, we're still technically in the path of totality, but we're definitely on like that southern edge of it. So yeah, I mean, it was still pretty cool. I think we talked about a little bit on here last week, I know, but yeah, the neighborhood dogs are going nuts for those like couple minutes because they didn't know what the hell was going on. And I know when it came to be daylight again, saw a couple herons actually flying super low to the ground. So I don't know if obviously the nature instinct probably kicked in. They probably thought it was morning, so they're looking obviously low for food and everything like that. But yeah, still cool. Kind of obviously sucked in that element of it. I know there was a couple places around us that was cloudy, but you still got a good full view of it during the time. I think the closer to Syracuse you were, the better it ended up being in terms of, like, hyper-local. So, yeah. What are you going to do?
I thought the coolest part was, one, the streetlights came on first. Let's
not get... All the streetlights came on in our neighborhood. Yeah. All of them
I thought the coolest part was you could see the darkness coming from the clouds.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, too. I mean, I actually said it on After FLX Weekly today here in studio. Our guests, we were talking to them about it a little bit, and kind of was like, and I don't want to spend, I guess, too much more time on it, but only because of what we have to get to, but it kind of felt like Manhunt, you know, when we would play Manhunt back in the day, where it was, It wasn't like dark. Like you could still probably see without there being light.
Yeah.
But kind of that vibe, you know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, like that part was kind of cool in that sense. But
3 o'clock in the afternoon would be dark like that.
Yeah. Pretty yeah.
Crazy. I mean, it gets dark around thunderstorms like that, but this wasn't a thunderstorm.
I ended up venturing to Geneva a little bit afterwards. I was trying to get a walk in and I didn't care so much about traffic. I knew traffic was going to be bad. Parking was going to be tough. But I couldn't get a walk in. It ended up raining pretty good where I was trying to walk and everything. So I was like kind of stuck what I could do. But yeah, I mean, I know it was kind of not hectic here in Saga Falls, but from what I heard, a couple of the bigger roads traffic-wise were kind of clogged up, but Geneva was an absolute madhouse Monday. I don't know if you end up going to the office at all. I do not. Was that by choice or by being told not to go near the office at all on Monday for you?
Oh, I was off.
Okay.
I had the day off. But.
Probably for the best for you. You being, for those who don't know, the Finger Lakes Times main office is in Geneva. Nick, you would have been in for an awful time.
I bet.
In terms of, like, not at work. I'm just saying in terms of, like, trying to do anything.
Yeah.
Like, hypothetically, if you got told, like, oh, I have to go to this, like, emergency press conference thing at Hobart for something with athletics, you would not have been able to go anywhere. You would have been doing.
Wow. Yeah. That bad.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of things doing on top of each other, I guess. And
whoa. Settle down.
About back-to-back championships.
Yeah, let's get into this a little bit here. That's a
terrible transition.
Well, you did your best. UConn goes back-to-back. They're the first since the 07-08 Florida Gator squad to do so in men's. And before that, the 93-94, 92-93 Duke Blue Devils.
You sure it's not Paul Russo's fantasy football championships in 14-15?
No. We aren't a college basketball squad. But the UConn Huskies go back-to-back. I'll table one portion of the rest of it for now until we get to a later discussion because it's pertinent to something we'll discuss about their legacy in my mind. But simply put, this might have been, and I don't think people fully realized it in the moment, now that we're getting a few more days away from it, this is probably the most dominant tournament team of our lifetime so far. And it's the most point differential or highest point differential, however you want to say it. They only trailed for 5 minutes and like 40 something seconds of the tournament as a whole, and they never trailed by more than five in the tournament. We were sitting here, Nick, a month and a half ago, borderline on 2 months ago now, talking about can anybody more or less beat UConn at this point? And obviously, if we go back, we can answer our question as no, nobody really could.
How many losses did they have? Three.
Yeah, I mean,
it's bad.
This was a team that obviously Dan Hurley head coach, led by Don McClingan, who I believe is going to the NBA. I haven't seen anything saying that he's not. You know. It's kind of crazy because, like, this is a team I used to really hate. And there's still, like, that rivalry element because I'm a Syracuse fan. But it's been really awesome because it's tough to get excited about anything Northeast college-wise, sports-wise at the moment in terms of, like, the major programs like UConn. Because, like, football-wise, right, we haven't had much around here in a while. Yeah, you know, Syracuse has gone to bowl games and Boston College has gone to bowl games and stuff like that, but it's like 7-5 and 8-4 are the good years now. And college basketball, it's been more or less in a similar vein, but not quite. And this is where maybe, like, I'll table the rest of that discussion for when we talk about the true legacy at the moment of UConn and this team. But, for you know, the college sports landscape, the fact that the Northeast kind of is really kind of taking it to them in one sport right now, pretty big. And this UConn team is, you know, there was a lot of discussion last year. I remember, you know, we get done with the tournament, and there's always a couple days, well, for the most part, we'll touch on this obviously as well, most part, you know, the couple days after the title game get kind of quiet for obviously it's more than a couple days, but you know, the way it works, right, just feels like a couple days. And this year is not the case because of Calipari, but you know, the talk last year was the fact that, you know, you're right, there's going to be a lot of guys from UConn going to the NBA. They're going to strike while the iron was hot. You know, guys like Sanogo, you know, stuff like that. They declared and left. Hurley had to go and rebuild. And he already had a decent recruiting class coming in. That's probably underselling it. But, you know, he had them coming in. You had transfers coming in. Spencer, for example, transfer from Loyola in the are they American East? No, Patriot, apologies. Patriot League, you know, stuff like that. And it's a short turnaround window. You got to get guys in it to win it together in a relatively short window of time, all things considered. And he's done that now back-to-back years. And I have no reason. Now, the likelihood of a three-peat happening is kind of crazy. I think you more or less have to go back to UCLA for that, you know, when they were just winning everything and undefeated year after year. But I have no reason, in all honesty, going into next season not having UConn be the favorite all over again, because, like, why wouldn't they? Like, you know Hurley's going to do it again. And when you have the best coach in the country, not the best player, you know, second best and third best and everything like that players, it's a tough combination to beat. And, oh, by the way, the Big East, just, it's a very good conference. It's, you know, to me, I put it, you know, this year is probably the second best conference in the country. You're not getting.
Not first.
Yeah, probably not. But
who's first?
I mean, I think I would just go, for regular season purposes, I'd probably go Big 12. But, I mean, that didn't really pay off in the long run, obviously. So, I don't know. Maybe. It's interesting because, like, we could probably do more revisionist history on this, like, either later on in the pod or another pod, but, you know, the ACC probably should be, like, up there, too, in all things considered, either way. Yeah, I mean, this is just a true sentiment and statement of what has been, you know, this frankly quiet giant, really.
Blue blood.
Well, do we want to do this discussion now with more or less the legacy about this team, or do we want to kind of table it and let you get your kind of initial thoughts out on just...
Yeah, let's get my initial
thoughts. Just UConn.
Hey, set it over here.
It's all you.
Give my initial thoughts.
What is yours?
That Purdue was actually a good team. I think they could have won a national title if it was any other year. That team was not good. Obviously, they didn't shoot well in the national title game, but overall, looking at, like, they proved a lot of people wrong. People thought they were going to, you know, lose again like they always do, and they got there, but they just ran into a buzzsaw, you know, and UConn, and you could say it just so happened it was the championship game. The same thing happened to Alabama in the semifinals. The same thing happened to Illinois in the Elite Eight. It's just that was their time to go because UConn was not losing, and they were a lot better than they were the year before. This UConn team was so much better this year. And that happens with experience and, you know, some of the guys that came back. And Dan Hurley, did you say he was the best coach in the country? Is that what is that what came out of your mouth?
Yeah.
I don't know about that just because.
Well, who is right now?
He's got a great team.
Well, we'll answer that when we get back.
I'm not saying he's not a great coach. I'm just saying he had a great team. A lot of. Give Matt Painter that team. I bet you he wouldn't win the national title.
This is where I think we might veer a little bit. I don't think so. I think Matt Painter, good coach, but the fact that he appeared to be one of the few guys in the room that couldn't tell what UConn's game plan was, and it was like that from the jump, where it's like, yeah, we're just going to kind of let Zach Edey do his thing and just stop everybody else because it's just going to be easier that way. And the fact he couldn't adjust on that, kind of worry. Worrisome is probably not the right word, but, like, I worry for Purdue next year. I think they will still more than likely be, like, a tournament team.
Yeah.
And if not the best, probably the second-best team out of the Big Ten next year. But
– no, this run Purdue had, this championship window is over. They're going to have to create a new window, and – And you, even if you create a new window, you never can guarantee your spot back.
Oh, no, no. I mean, that's the thing.
I know UConn made it look easy this year, winning it back-to-back, right. But you never can guarantee it. Look at Wisconsin. What was that, 2015? They still haven't gotten back. Mm-hmm. Not even close. That's why Baylor, they won it the 1 year. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness, because who knows when they'll get back.
Right.
Syracuse, luckily they won in 2003. Obviously, they went to Final Fours, and they've been to Final Fours lately, but they still haven't got back to the championship game. I've been to the championship game before that too, but you just can't guarantee your spot back.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, I could be 50, 60, 110 years old and Purdue still won't go to the national title game. Mm. Sure, there'll be another window. There's always another window. You gotta build the program back up, because now Purdue's gonna be down and another team that Big Ten's gonna have to step up and take their spot. And it sucks, the Big Ten. Still haven't won since 2000, Michigan State. They came close to Wisconsin, like I mentioned. They came close to Purdue here. Michigan State apparently is those this Green March Madness, because it still has not won since 2000. But it's just, why do they get so much respect, the Big Ten, when they haven't done that? And now UConn, the Big East, the ACC, has done it so many times and don't get nearly the respect here in 2024 like the Big Ten.
Yeah, this is where I think I kind of want to open up that legacy discussion a little bit here, because it's kind of fascinating to me where certain programs lie in, like, the cultural space and discussion space like this, because, and this is where I know it's like a semi-hot take, or it is probably more a hot take more than anything else, and I don't mind it. Like, it's just the way I view things, right? But, like, UConn is one, and this is where I will – brings some of that table information up now to this. UConn has won 6 titles in the past 25 years, most of any program in the men's
side. It seems like they pop up and they, yep, right. Nice title.
But like, they've only in that stretch had, like, really, truly only had one down year. Like, and that was a year that, like, I felt like they fired Kevin Ollie. I'm like, I don't know if that was justified, to be completely fair. That was right on the heels. Obviously, Calhoun retires. Ollie spent a year rebuilding and still got to the title or the tournament, wins the title next year, and the whole chaos like that. But, you know, and this is where, like I said, I feel like I'm on the hot take side of this, because, like, I feel like blue bloods can kind of fluctuate a little bit at any given time. And I say that because, like, the one team that always sticks out to me in this blue blood conversation is Indiana. Indiana hasn't done jack in years. I mean, literal years. And this is where I think there's a differential between blue blood and still being, like, one of those, like, headline schools in what I would call, like, the traditional, like, traditions bracket, where to me that's like your Indiana's, your Syracuse's, you know, like, at this point, like, Gonzaga, right? I would venture, and this is where I think it gets kind of hot takey in all honesty, but, like, I view UConn as being a way bigger blue blood or way better basketball institution than Duke at this point. I view them probably better than, like, UNC at this point. Like, we're talking, it's been, we're closing in on the decade since Duke last won the title, right? We're closing in on it being not quite a decade, but we're in that 7-year window now of UNC's last title type thing, you know? And, or, well, I guess it'd be 5 years, 6 years. Yeah. So, but it's what I'm getting at here is, like, we always talk about how, like, your blue bloods, right, are your Kentuckys, your UNCs,
Kansas,
you know, UCLA. And it's not knocking any of those institutions at this point, right? But if we don't hold Nebraska in college football in that regard anymore, you can't hold those schools in that same regard anymore for college basketball. You just can't. Like, and There are other examples at this point, right? Like, college baseball, to me, like, when we were growing up, it was always, like, Texas. And Texas hasn't done much in 15 years in the college baseball landscape. They just haven't, right? Like, now it's, like, your Vanderbilts. Your it's kind of funny. Your Louisville's, right? Your Kentucky in baseball.
Give LSU some credit.
Well, no, but that's an example, right? LSU, where, you know, if you were to go back in the really way back machine with LSU in college baseball, like, they weren't. And for them, it's been a really – that singular program might be the one true blue blood in its own sport, where it's been like that for pretty much what I would call the modern era, they've been the only ones.
Yep.
Like, it's not even a question, right? Circling back, though, to get to the UConn point, like, the fact that, and you brought up, the fact that this program doesn't get the respect it really actually deserves from the general populace is laughable to me. It really is. And like I said, this is a school I hated. Still kind of hate. But, like, I'd rather see them do good because of the Big East and stuff like that than some of these other schools. Like, and, like, I can get, like, Dan Hurley, I'm surprised he didn't get teed up at minimum for shoving Spencer, but... He's not the first coach to do it this year. He's not going to be the last, I don't think, until there's legitimate rule changes and stuff like that. Like, you can have your own beefs, but, like, he runs a good program. He puts his players first. And in today's footprint of college sports, that's not going to change. It's just not going to. Like, to me, UConn is, like, pretty much at the pedestal on their own right now in college basketball. And who's up there really kind of near them or next to them? Like...
Nobody.
There's kind of nobody. I think I'd entertain UNC. Like, I'd allow UNC to be discussed there. I think due to recency, I'd probably would allow Baylor kind of discussion. Kansas-ish. Yeah, I'd allow it. But, like, outside of them, it gets weirdly kind of thin. It just does. And, like, I think there's just a lot more in that, like, traditional rank for me right now than there is blue blood. If you're blue blood, you're the ones doing it consistently. And UConn's the most consistent team of the past quarter century. There's just no way around it. If you don't want to listen to the numbers, that's fine. But you're just being ignorant at that point. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, I think the biggest reason of it is they've had three coaches. In a lot of these programs, they've stuck with the same coach. Calipari, now he's gone. That just happened. But he was at Kentucky for years. And they had... You know, they already had the legacy built there. Kansas, Bill Self's been there for years. North Carolina and Duke just changed their coaches.
Oh, I forgot Villanova in my discussion.
Villanova, but it. Villanova has not done much since, you know,
well,
Jay Wright left. Yeah, but, I think those are just, what you call it, ignorant people who don't think UConn's a blue blood.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably it. It's just, you're idiotic if you don't think UConn is one of the best college basketball programs.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. UNC's probably the one you can put up there, but Duke's gone downhill. Mm-hmm. I say downhill, they just made the Elite Eight. But the Duke of Weaver used to growing up to is not there. Mm-hmm. It's not the same Duke that we grew up watching. And UConn is still that same UConn. And a lot of it, I said three coaches, but it was those down years a little bit. Kevin Ollie was the head coach.
Well, Calhoun retired, right, to put a little bit of context in, right? Calhoun retires. They bring Kevin Ollie, who I wouldn't say is a true legacy hire, but, you know, a UConn guy. I don't think he was really, I guess, well, he wasn't assistant under Calhoun, so I guess he was part of the Calhoun tree.
And Dan Hurley, we're just getting to know Dan Hurley. He's not a coach.
In
the
grand scheme of it, you're right, yes.
We haven't seen him coach for years.
Right.
And Calhoun, he's just as big as Coach K and Roy Williams and Bill Self.
Well, he should be. He isn't recognized as it, though.
Yeah, it's just UConn just doesn't get the love. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, they win national titles. Winning back-to-back helps. I don't think they've ever won back-to-back.
No.
So that definitely helps. I think people should take a look that they are the front runner, and they should be the front runner going forward.
They've done something here in the past couple of years that only two other schools have done in the past 30. And to go even deeper than that, it's only four in the past, I guess, pretty much NCAA tournament history. Like, it's just crazy to me how there's, like, this, like, weird, like, they're trying, like, people are trying to treat this as an outlier. It's not an outlier. Like, this is a program that once Jim Calhoun got, I don't want to say the system figured out, right? Because he more or less kind of, I don't want to say drugged this program, but, like, if people don't know the history of UConn, it's kind of an interesting backstory how, like, it's like when they came to the Big East, they were viewed as, like, this. And it's kind of weird because of the other teams kind of involved in the Big East, but, like, the context here is pretty key. Like, they literally had to, like, as I call it, they were the ones who had to pay for dinner. like, they were the ones who, like, were mocked for having a gym be considered a barn, which is not, I'm not mean to knock, like, Seton Hall here, for example. But, like, did you see any NIT this year?
No.
So Seton Hall had to play their home games at the NIT at, like, literally their original gym.
Oh, really?
Because, the Devils held precedent at the Prudential Center, so, like, they couldn't go there. And, like, that's where Seton Hall was playing their games up until, like, you know, the late 90s and stuff like that. And, like, I look at that, and it's kind of, like, laughable to me that's happening. And then I look, well, and then I look at how UConn was treated back, you know, over 30, 35 years ago. And for Calhoun to more or less build this program from scratch and get it to where it is, I mean, it's, I wouldn't say it's a miracle. I don't think anything is a miracle in college sports in that sense, but.
Especially when the women's program was so dominant.
Yeah, and I mean, and they kind of rose up, I wouldn't say truly together. I think the women's team kind of got to national prominence slightly ahead of the men's team. I think people kind of forget, the men's team had a Final Four run in the early 90s that was kind of out of left field. And that was probably the biggest outlier in program history in terms of success. Like, they shouldn't, it's a lot of the classic Big East at that time where it's like, oh, Seton Hall's in the Final Four, and, like, nobody kind of knows how, but they're just there. That was the case with UConn, and I just think, for what it is, and I know you say, like, we talked about, like, you brought up how there's been three coaches and stuff like that, and blah, 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 like, Kentucky's been kind of the same. I know you mentioned Calipari, but, like, they went Patino to, like, Tubby Smith. There's a couple other people mixed in to Calipari, and now it's whatever. But, like, what's the difference between them in that sense where people want to try and still put Kentucky on this pedestal when they've only won one title in our lifetimes? And, or, well, I guess it's really two titles in our lifetimes. But they're just so spaced out that it's like, who gives a shit? You know? It's Kentucky hasn't won a title now in
2000.
Quick, yeah, no, I'm trying
2008?
To. 2008? Not, well, technically 9, I guess, but.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do a quick math on it. Like, what, 14 years, 15 years, right? Like, what are we doing with them, right? And it's not a knock. I mean, Kentucky has a albeit in my mind, I view it as an asterisk-rich history in college basketball. Like, people still want to put them up in that echelon, and I can't. They don't have the success to prove it lately.
Yeah.
UConn's the only team. The only team that does it consistently in that regard. And if you want to bring up, well, it's not just about title. That's fine by me. But, like, UConn still is, like, then, like, team number two. And then Gonzaga would be number one.
You know what's holding them back? They're 0-1 all time in 6 overtime games.
Yeah, that's factually correct. That's factually correct. Let's touch a couple minutes here. The women's national title game, South Carolina beating Iowa there.
Yeah, lucky UConn men's won because NC right. State and the other UConn team, 0-3.
Yeah, yeah. We had that backdoor chance of having the same title game across both, but didn't happen. Dawn Staley and the Gamecocks. Undefeated season. They also kind of continue what has been. And the women's game's a little bit different. There's been, I wouldn't say, let me rephrase this a little bit. The women's game, there's kind of just still a natural more likelihood of there being repeat champions still at this point. But we're getting to a point where I think we're kind of coming to the tail end of that window and you're going to see a lot more parity, I guess would be the right term here. But anyway, all things considered, South Carolina just, they've been on a roll now for really, to be fair, a number of years, and it just kind of continues on. Obviously, the end of the collegiate career of Caitlin Clark and a couple other girls across the board on both teams, but obviously she gets the main headlines. And definitely, and look, I'm not a big fan of her, but it's hard not to acknowledge the fact she really opened the door up to a lot of eyes for the women's game. And I hope that the eyes kind of continue on that. And I don't mean to diverge off topic here, but, you know, I'll be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, Tara Vanderveer retiring last night for Stanford as well, the most winningest coach in college basketball history. So a lot of chapters closing, but a lot of them in my mind opening up in the women's game in the past. Really, it's been multiple years, but I think the punctuation is the fact that the most watched basketball game in a number of years was Sunday afternoon for that Iowa-South Carolina game. And if you were to tell me even 5 years ago, I'd been like, nah, probably not. Like, you know, we would watch it, right? But like, just because we enjoy basketball and stuff like that, and we'd keep it moving. But like now, it's, I wouldn't say it's like, I don't view anything necessarily as like must see TV in that sense. But like, you know, these games have gotten to a point now where it's like you can sit down and treat it as if it were the men's title game.
I love that 3 o'clock start time championship Sunday. Mm-hmm. I don't know why college football, especially college football don't, they play the first week on Monday. They don't play a Monday game the whole season. They put the national title game on Monday night, and college basketball is Monday night as well, which is the least traffic college basketball day. I don't understand the Monday night championships.
I don't know if I follow that week for Monday night. That's why.
Yeah, I know. That's why college football does it. But it's weird. It's like college football has been Saturday the whole year. Let's put it on Monday. Some reason Monday's a big... I mean, you ever notice TV shows Mondays, too? It's like a big TV night, Mondays.
Well, because after the weekend, you know...
People want to relax.
Right. Yeah,
I get that. But anyway, going back to the game... I never got to the game, but...
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, both games... You had the better program take down the star player of each sport. Zach Edey, the biggest name in both men's, and then Caitlin Clark, the biggest name in women's this year.
Robbie Avila, but
who?
Now transfer portal.
Is that the Indiana State guy?
Former.
They lost to Seton Hall in the championship, right? Or no, they won.
Did. They blew a 9-point lead in the final couple minutes.
Got to go back to the Garden. But anyway, this just South Carolina, loaded team, just like UConn, just a loaded team. There's nothing Zach Edey or Caitlin Clark could have done. I mean, they have great teams as well. It's just they're not as good as those teams. Right. South Carolina, 3 national titles now. I mean, if they start winning, they've never won a consecutive titles, have they? I don't think so.
Well, I was trying to remember. Didn't they win it last year?
No.
LSU. Oh, yeah, LSU did, yeah.
Yeah.
Back-to-back SEC.
My point I'm trying to make is we had the Tennessee era.
Right.
We had the UConn era. Mm-hmm. Have we really reached the South Carolina era? You know, it's just, yes, they've competed. They've won national championships. But is this a South Carolina era? I just don't know, like it was the UConn, because UConn did, you know, Breanna Stewart, 4-time national champion, 4 years. I mean, and then Tennessee, everything they did. I think we are approaching that. I think when I say era, I say also mean dynasty. UConn men's has done great, but and you know they've been consistent, like you said, but never a dynasty because they went years without winning. As dynasties are champion multiple championships years. Now UConn's starting to create like the first probably men's dynasty in quite a long time. So and South Carolina's starting to do that. So we're seeing dynasties on both sides of the game here in college basketball. And that's a scary sight for the rest of the teams in the country because there's a lot of teams in the country. And if there's a dynasty going on, that doesn't give a lot of hope for those other teams.
Right.
And what South Carolina's done, unbelievable. Undefeated season. I think because it happens in the women's game a lot more, you see the undefeated season. Obviously, the men's game has been – I can't even remember. Who was the last team that went undefeated? It's been so long.
For the men's?
We don't appreciate the women's going undefeated because it happens so often. UConn go on those streaks winning games in a row. It happens. It's not like it happens all the time, but it happens. We don't appreciate it. You should really appreciate that South Carolina never lost a single game this entire year, which in any sport is super impressive.
Yeah.
I know college football happens all the time, but even that, it's super impressive to go undefeated, and they don't appreciate it. And Caitlin Clark, great career, really got a lot of new eyes on the women's game, and that's going to continue into the WNBA. That's only going to help that sport, that league, even more. So,
be fun to watch on that front. So, let's get to really our final bigger topic here. MLB dealing with a crisis here at the moment, to put it bluntly. Arm issues abound, to put it lightly here.
I don't know your opinion on this. I'd like to hear it.
Well,
I like to hear your...
You know it, but I don't think I've really articulated it out loud. So, look, for those who don't know, first 2.5 weeks...
The pitch clock is evil!
I'll slow your roll. there's been a plethora of elbow issues, right? It's players going down who more than likely not all of them are going to need Tommy John or haven't been announced yet, but a plethora of guys are going through it right now. And we had, I think, in a matter of 48 hours, have six guys go on the IL with some sort of UCL or elbow issue. And, you know, it's unnatural to throw a baseball anyway in the first place, let alone kind of do the things a lot of these pitchers do, right? And, you know, the Players Association comes out and kind of says it's about the pitch clock and blah, blah, blah. And, far be it from me to be the guy who, I don't know much medically in that sense, but it's not a pitch clock issue in my mind.
No.
It's a more of a, what I called to a couple people, it's a just a baseball kind of culture issue at the moment, mindset issue from youth level all the way up. And I've been saying the youth level portion of it for sure now for, it's probably since I got out of high school and I kind of got really more into the coaching element side of things and stuff like that. And, you know, especially in the past couple of years with the really kind of main attraction that spin rate and stuff like that's become, you have these pitchers who are trying to achieve like the stuff because these teams get in their ear and it's like, hey, you know, if you throw a pitch with X amount of RPM on it, like it's going to have so much movement that it'll do whatever. But I can't remember if I should put it in our group chat. I don't think I did, but I shared it with a couple people. Foul Territory, which is a baseball podcast. It's a bunch of former big leaguers on there. I know AJ Pierzynski's on there, Eric Kratz, Trevor May, Ken Rosenthal's on a couple times a week. They had the Texas Rangers head trainer on with them yesterday, and he flatly called out pretty much most teams in the MLB for forcing these younger players to just have so much work and load on their arm that it's frankly is causing these arms to blow out and blow out at just a ridiculous rate right now. And he said, like, could the pitch clock be a little bit part of it? Yeah, he was like, I'm not going to discount that. But it's the lack of awareness from, you know, the grassroots level out up of, like, forcing these guys to just put so much pressure on their arms that, like, this is just bound to happen eventually. And he brought up a couple really good examples, at least on the Rangers, right, with Cody Bradford and Dane Dunning, who took a little bit longer than teams probably thought they were going to get to the big leagues to do it. I mean, Dane Dunning was a pretty big White Sox prospect back in the day, and Bradford's been in the Rangers system, but, you know, now they're footholds in this Rangers rotation, and they're the great examples of it. I know the really all-time example of this is Greg Maddux, right, who mastered the art of pitching, not the art of throwing fast,
yeah,
which is what a lot of these guys are forced upon now. And I couldn't agree more with what he said, right? Like, what's the point of having a 0.8 whip if it's only good for 1 month, as opposed to having a whip of 1.1, which is good for, you know, 162 games a year? I was like, I know which one I'd take. Sure, it's not going to look as glamorous, but I know which one I'd take. I'm with him. Give me the 1.1. Give me the guy who knows how to pitch, who, like, the arm is going to be good the whole time. And that's the part that sucks. I've been saying this, like I said, I want to go back to something I said about the youth level of it. You have kids now, and the Little League World Series is a really good example of it in my mind. These kids who are 10, 11, 12 years old, who are throwing sliders and stuff like that, they have no business throwing that pitch at that young of age. Your UCL, the ligament in your elbow, right, doesn't mature until your mid-20s for most people. Like, me and you, like, it just got matured for us, technically. You mean to tell me that kid who's 12 throwing that slider is not going to have damage on his elbow? Like, it's stupid to think he's not. Like, so that's why you have a bunch of kids, frankly kids, right, who are 14 having, like, Tommy John surgeries all of a sudden.
Yeah, I know.
You shouldn't be having Tommy John at 14. You shouldn't even be having Tommy John at 26. You shouldn't even be having Tommy John when you're 35. It should be a thing when you're 40, if anything. And that's what I mean by it's a crisis. It's like you're forcing and I know it's not the best example of it, but it's the best way I can equate to it so people get it. It's like you're telling guys to go back to spear tackling in the NFL, frankly. Like we know the dangers of it, but like go ahead and just kind of like throw your head in there. You know. Like it's kind of crazy to me that like a guy like Garrett Cole, for example, right, made it as long as he did without having like an elbow issue like he has. I think he had the one time before in 2016 or 17, I think. 16? Actually, no, 15. Might have been earlier than that. But, like, he's been a workhorse in the MLB ever since. Like, and you look around the league, and, like, those are just fewer and fewer now. Like, the guys – and that's where I think, you know, these guys who are crafty are going to just kind of come back and have these resurgences, right, where it's like, yeah, your ERA might be kind of sitting at, like, 3.8, but, like, at least you're around the whole year and you're trustworthy enough that we can get you in, right? Like, it's just crazy to me how, like, I don't think people – it's kind of like the UConn thing in a way. Like, it's just so obviously right there that, like, you're just got to be ignorant to this, like, not recognize it in a way.
Well, I liked how you treated a slider like it was an R-rated movie.
Well,
kids, don't be throwing a slider. You're not old enough yet.
It's just more the fact that you're putting so much pressure on a piece of your body that, and this is something I try because like now I'm more on the adult side of coaching and stuff like that where it's a little bit different. But it's like it sounds dumb, but like it's the same thing I tell some of them, right? Where it's like you have a huge life that's outside of baseball. Outside of these like 3 hours every Sunday, like, you know, don't jeopardize that doing this right now for the other, you know, however many hours in the week there are in that sense. Look, I'm not going to tell you how you live your life in that sense. If you're a parent of a 10, 11, 12 year old who's pitching, right? Like if you want to throw a slider and they want to do it, go ahead. I'm not going to get your way, but here's what I would do if I coached that age right now. There's only two pitches they're throwing: fastball, changeup. That's it. Once you've mastered those two anyway, you have any other pitch at your arsenal. And your changeup, you aren't putting any more pressure on your elbow than a fastball because you should be throwing it just like your fastball. That's the effectiveness of the changeup is it appears to be a fastball out of the hand, right? and drop enough that it acts on its own, you know.
Let's get you a Little League team. You need a man.
I don't know if I could do a Little League at this stage.
But hats off to you showing off the whip stat there. I haven't heard whip in a while.
Well, yeah.
I think it's underappreciated stat.
Underappreciated analytic.
I mean, it's the way you throw a baseball is obviously not normal, and then also putting the spin rate on things, it's just not good for your arm. That's the reason. It's not the pitch clock. It's definitely not the pitch clock. I mean, that's just coming up with an excuse because there's no secret. The union, the players' union is the worst. I'm not defending the owners. Don't dunk on me.
It is wild how, because like baseball's had a lot of different controversies already in the past in its opening, frankly, month because of the Korea series, but yeah, you had the players' union, which is wild. The fact that, in my mind, it is actually, in terms of functioning body, it's the best players' union in the Big Four. But it's wild how it's also the worst, like, functioning body of the Big Four player of the four unions.
Yeah, I mean, like, those two sides in all the Big Four sports hate each other the most. They do not see eye to eye. They never will. That's why we've had so many breaks.
Dumb lockouts, yeah.
Yeah. And they're just making the excuse of the pitch clock. It's not the pitch clock. It's putting so much damage on your arm.
And to back up the pitch clock thing too here with you for a second, I had somebody say to me the other day, like, well, the pitch clock is new for all these guys still. No, it's not. If you're a pitcher right now outside of
the older guys.
No, actually, even the older guys, because most of them have all rehabbed in the minors at this point. The pitch clock has been in the minor leagues now for 10 years plus at most levels. Like, you are used to some form of pitch clock. You can't be surprised at this stage with the pitch clock in that sense. You know what I mean? Like, it is, like I said, Could there be a slight element to the pitch clock? Sure. I'm not going to sit here and deny, like, maybe that couple extra seconds might help. I'm not going to sit here and whatever, right? But a lot of it, too, is the same part of me that goes, like, I understand pitch counts. I'm all in favor of pitch counts in certain situations, but I also think it's detrimental if a guy's in a groove that you just pull him right away. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's just a combination of a lot of stuff that is more or less started at the youth level. These guys carry it on through, and now you're just seeing the repercussions of it at this time because there's just that the youth movement right now is so big in the MLB that it's just right here in front of us.
The pitch clock was one of the greatest things they ever done with the sport. Mm-hmm. If they take this away,
yeah,
it's actually drawn more interest in this sport is this pitch clock. If they take this away because the players want it gone, I don't know, Paul.
I don't think the pitch clock's going anywhere. I don't think it's going to.
It can't go away.
I mean, here's where I can continue this discussion a little bit more, too, on this. So, a lot of it, too, like, and this is what I mean by it's like at the youth level, at the grassroots level. When we were growing up, we were all pretty much multi-sport athletes, whether it was just like we were playing two sports or some, like I did three. I was doing soccer, basketball, and baseball. You were just doing basketball and baseball, you know, and stuff like that. Whereas now, and don't get me wrong, there still is a lot of that going on, especially at the smaller areas like around here, when, you know, but there's just so much emphasis now on just playing like one sport. And maybe this is more like just like, and it probably is the broader just discussion of youth sports as a whole. But like the emphasis of just playing one sport is just been so glaring across a couple different fronts. Like we're seeing it now with MLB with health. We've been seeing it in basketball for a while with knees. Like, you know, there's just been an absurd uptick in knee injuries in the NBA the past decade for no reason, or the fact that these guys just have so many miles on their ligaments and stuff that, like, it is the same thing with baseball and pitching. Like, there's just so much mileage already on these kids' arms coming up. Like I said, like, what do you expect when this stuff happens at this point now? Like, you have to, like, accept it? I don't think you have to. I think there has to be a fundamental, like, culture change at this point. Like, you can't sit here and tell me that, you know, this emphasis on doing it one way and all of a sudden seeing an uptick in injury and stuff like that because of what is clearly this issue is just by happen chance. No, it's traceable. It's, to me, it's science, even though it's not science, right? It's the scientific theory of, like, we have, like, pin it back, do your hypothesis, and figure out. Well, like, it's right there. It's very, to me, it's beyond traceable. Beyond traceable. It's right there on the map. You can see it, you know?
Forget Little League coach. You should be a science teacher.
No.
Did you learn something today, kids?
Yeah.
Bill Nye over here.
Yeah, Mr. Russo went on a weird tirade for 15 minutes about pitching and ligaments.
What about football? How with the high ankle sprains, how can we stop those? The hamstring injuries.
They banned the hip tackle, so that's going to...
What's the big one? Running back one? Torn ACL?
Yeah. But that's the same thing, right? I mean, it's just all these kids are playing so much singular of one sport now. It's like you aren't giving other parts of your body to rest when other parts could be working and stuff. It's just, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's a reason why this is the worst, like, NBA draft class ever coming out right now. It's because all these guys, for the most part, just play, like, AAU ball and stuff like that. And that's why I think you have better products coming out of Europe now, just way more consistently anyway than they have been in the past, because they just, the culture over there is different. It's just different. You are a more well-rounded athlete and individual over when you come from these European countries than you are in America. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. It's visual. It's factual at that point.
It's an interesting start to the 2024 season. You know a sport that doesn't have many injuries? Golf.
Well, you know, a couple guys coming back from surgeries and stuff. Yeah, so we got a couple of minutes here. You know, who are you kind of looking at here for the match?
I was checking out the par 3 contest. Ricky was winning. Well, but nobody who's ever won the par 3 contest has ever won the Masters.
It's true.
How do you not go with Scheffler? I mean, Scheffler is playing extremely well right now. I'd like to see Tiger make the cut. He made the cut that one year. It was last year. He withdrew, and it was the rainy, disgusting day. But I will say, my birthday's on Sunday.
It's true.
It's also my mom's birthday. Big, she's a big Tiger Woods fan. The last time the Masters ended on my birthday, he won in 2019.
How about?
And it was a pushed-up Masters because of the rain. They pushed it up that day, and we watched it at Captain Jack's in Sodus Bay, where they used to get as many free wings as your age of your birthday if you go there for your birthday. I don't know if they still do that. I think they sold it. I think Captain Jack's got new owners. But not here to report about Captain Jack's.
That's the third week in a row you've brought them up.
good place, man. Good place. Right off the water.
I've never been.
I mean, just hoping Tiger plays well. Scheffler's obviously the favorite. I think, obviously, I don't know why the people make it such a big deal, because they didn't come to agreement. The LIV versus the PGA Tour. This has been going on. Last year, I witnessed it. Brooks Koepka went in there and won at Rochester. Big Oak. Big Oak? Or is that the one in Geneva?
Oak Hill.
Oak Hill. Let's play with a Big Oak, man. I think Brooks has got the best shot for an LIV golfer. Obviously, John Rahm is now LIV. Mm. He is the defending champion as well. So, be interesting to see how that goes as defending champ being welcomed into the, I think, is it yesterday or is it tonight? The champion's dinner. And usually the
I thought it was last night.
I think it's last night. Yeah. The defending champion host dinner, mm-hmm. and they usually decide what they're going to eat. Interesting to see how that went. I don't know how it went, but that. But if you want to pick, I'm going to go Rory McIlroy. Obviously, still looking for the career Grand Slam. Never won at the Masters. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go. He's healthy now. He's playing better. Played in the par three today. Not doing great in the par three, but going Will Zalatoris.
God, everybody's picking him. It feels like a lot of people are picking him.
Wins the Masters. He's a good pick, young pick. Looks like that caddy from Caddyshack, or Happy Gilmore, I mean. But I can't go against Scheffler, Koepka.
We do have our first ace, well, reported ace of the par three.
Luke Liss?
Gary Woodland.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think I saw Luke Liss had one.
Lukey List, how about? You want to know who I'm picking for the Masters?
Gary Woodland.
Steven Yeager. I think he's a good little backdoor pick. Has some tremendously long odds, I know, but he won the last tournament out. Was able to capitalize on that with the Houston.
That is a bold pick.
Well, he's played really well all year so far.
Yeah.
I'm gonna roll Stevie Yeager, Yeager bombs, and
that's cool.
We'll go with that. I do like, you know, it's tough because, like, I do think it's tough with the Masters a little bit because I feel like, despite it being obviously the first major of the year and all the pomp and circumstance, it feels like of the four majors, it's kind of the only place I can kind of equate to. It's kind of like the Daytona 500 in essence, where it lends itself to have that dark horse winner every now and then. Not to, you know, knock on some of the guys who have won in the past or anything like that, right? But, you know. Danny Willett, for example, is someone that always just kind of sticks out to me naturally and stuff like that.
So, Charles Schwartzel.
Yeah.
Weir way back.
It kind of allows for that to – I don't know why. There's always dark horses in every tournament that kind of pop up and win every now and then. I don't want – but it just feels like the Masters, for whatever reason, lends itself to that. And I feel like, you know, it's been a number of years since we really had that happen. I think the last one might have been what?
Well, if you want to be technical, Tiger Woods won in 2018.
Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, definitely. But I think I think his name, though, at that point still was really carrying so much.
I wouldn't say Matsuyama. Wouldn't say him.
Who was it the one time? Zach Johnson, maybe?
Zach Johnson, Trevor Immelman.
Yeah. Kind of like guys of those ilk. But
like Charles Schwartzel.
Yeah, it kind of lends itself. So I'm going to go with Yeager.
It wasn't that long ago.
I'm going to go with Yeager. I do have a little bit of action at the moment on Justin Thomas as well. I'm going to get a couple other guys in there. I do like Zalatoris.
Justin Thomas has to do better this weekend.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we've seen Justin Thomas up there. And I don't know what his Masters record is, but Jordan Spieth usually plays well here.
Mm-hmm.
Koepka is always good. He's just never won the Masters, but –
Then we'll do a little sprinkle action on Siwoo Kim as well, I think. So
one guy I keep saying I could always just picture him with a green jacket is Tony Finau. He just looks like a guy, but
I rode him for like three straight years, and this year I had to like just be the time where it's like I can't this year. Like I just can't.
Obviously, my brother.
That's right though. This will probably be the year that he actually does. You know,
my brother's a big Xander Schauffele fan. Yeah,
he's up there too.
Dustin Johnson won the Asterix Masters, so we'll see. Jesus. Played a lot easier.
November Masters.
Get played around. A lot easier then.
Nobody around, so.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, that'll do it then for Fresh Takes for today.
That's it.
Appreciate everybody for tuning in. Shout out, Nick, to you, your birthday, and your mom's birthday on Sunday. You're both turning 29, which is awesome, so
yeah.
Congratulations.
I actually am turning 29 this year.
Right, that's what I said.
Yeah, you're going to have to keep saying that. Going forward, but
you're 29.
I'm gonna shout out Dominic Maul's birthday the day before.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I'm always texting him before. He texted me before. Obviously, longtime friends. We used to make videos together. Those stupid videos we used to make.
We need to do some remastering on those. And
yeah,
get out.
We do. We need to bring it back. That was a good time. Never understand why we always shot him outside.
Director's commentary.
But his birthday turns 29 day before. Happy birthday, Dominic. Shout out
indeed. Any big plans this weekend?
Working Saturday morning or Saturday at noon as of right now. I don't know what the weather is.
Woof.
But off Sunday. I think we'll go out. I think I haven't decided yet, but we're going out to eat somewhere Sunday.
There you go.
Saturday free though. We'll see what's going on.
You never know.
And then obviously next weekend, me and your brother trying to get you to come.
Syracuse spring game. I'm kind of
next Saturday.
I'm locked into that, so I can't go.
Going to Pittsburgh for a day with your brother.
I look for it. It's nice.
Not sure if Matt's going yet, but can't confirm.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I do appreciate the offer. It's just locked into that spring game and stuff like that, and hopefully get some content out of that.
It's all right. It's thought that counts.
You get to see O'Neill Cruz, though.
Yes. Hopefully.
Well, you will.
Fingers crossed.
On that note, we'll head out.
Happy Siblings Day.
Happy Siblings Day. On that note, we'll head out. Like, share, and subscribe. All the fun stuff. We will be back again next Wednesday. Enjoy the weekend, everybody.